What can a fully impotent, chemically castrated survivor of two cancers and his postmenopausal partner possibly share about sex, intimacy, and relationships? Everything, they say, including a world of extraordinary emotional, sexual, and spiritual intimacy that most couples cannot even begin to imagine. Michael Russer and Jacqueline Lopez are co-authors of Return to Sex and Intimacy for Cancer Survivors and Their Partners. Hello, everyone. My name is Pamela Brewer, and I am delighted to welcome you to this edition of Mind Talk. And I am very pleased to say hello to Michael and Jacqueline. Hello, folks. How are you?
Hello, Pamela.
Oh, we're doing great, Pamela. Thank you. It's an honor to be on your program again.
Now, Michael, you heard me say a moment ago that you are the survivor of two cancers. What's going on with your health?
Well, it's my family, Pamela. It's my family. I lost five other members of my immediate family to various forms of cancer. My father died of liver cancer, my mother breast cancer, my oldest brother, some form of rare blood cancer, my oldest sister breast cancer, and then most recently another brother in malignant melanoma. I'm number six, and that wiped out half the family right there. I'm number six, and I'm the only one that has two forms of cancer. So I don't know if it's because we were raised in a meatpacking family. My dad had a meat processing plant back when we were younger, and we processed meats all the time. I don't know. I don't know if it's because it was upstate New York or there's something energetic going on. But it's very prevalent in my family, and it's a serious thing. And of the two cancers, the prostate cancer is the most serious for me because that's the one that can metastasize, and that's when you're in trouble. The chronic lymphocytic leukemia, or CLL, it's more bothersome. A lot of people have it, and it can be easily maintained over decades, typically. It's just your white blood cells don't die as fast as they should. But the prostate cancer is pretty serious, and which leads to my chemical castration, which essentially removes testosterone from my system, which is considered the fuel for the prostate cancer. And so my condition has progressed since you and I have talked last.
It has progressed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But if you saw me today, you'd think I was the picture of health. And I feel like the picture of health. But it's there, you know, it's there. And I don't identify with it, but I know it's there.
And Jacqueline Lopez, you're in a relationship with someone who has cancer. That would scare a lot of people away.
Yes, it is scary, but it's also an adventure and an opportunity to enjoy life every day as if it was the last day. People make assumptions that life is going to be forever. I'm going to tell them that I love him the next month. I'm going to, you know, we're going to take that trip 2 weeks from now. You know, we live in a society living in the future, constantly aiming to the future, or you know, having a conflict in a relationship for past events. In other words, our society live in the past and in the future, and what we need is to live in the present moment, to appreciate every moment as if it was the last minute that you enjoy with your loved one.
You say early on in the book that you have both co-authored, which is entitled Return to Sex and Intimacy for Cancer Survivors and Their Partners, that the tragedy of cancer can also become the gateway to extraordinary levels of all forms of intimacy. So I'm going to ask this of both of you. How is that possible that cancer can become a gateway to intimacy?
Well, let me take a stab at that first, since I'm the one with the cancer. the cancer came with another gift, and that was complete clinical impotence. Now, a lot of the men listening just took a double take when I said that, but it truly has become a gift. And it related to our interview a few years ago when I was working on another book called Hardly Broken, which ended up being like a chapter to this book. As Jacqueline said, the cancer itself becomes a gift. And when we're on the speaking platform, we tell this to the audience, you know, if you look at any challenge, within every challenge, Pamela, there is always a seed of a greater possibility of something even potentially transformational. And the cancer, the gift that cancer gave both of us, as Jacqueline was saying, is that we appreciate the moment and each other without thinking, well, someday I'll will. And it's not about the doing. It's about the being in the present moment. Now, that doesn't mean that you're zoning out from everything else. No, it's a deep state of awareness that we never would have discovered without the challenge of cancer and my impotence. So it's a deep state of awareness without judgment, expectations, or distractions. Imagine that kind of a space between two people. Very, very, very few people on this planet have experienced that. We experience it every day throughout the day, and that's an incredible gift. And in fact, we are now teaching people how to become present. We demonstrate it right up on stage. In 30 seconds, we can bring people to the sense of presence in 30 seconds, and they've never experienced it before. And often members of the audience burst into tears because they recognize what just happened. So that's the first gift. And the second gift, due primarily to my impotence, is that the way that men and women are wired, both culturally and genetically, is primarily for procreation purposes, which is great for making babies, but not necessarily so much for deep connecting intimacy on all levels, which is something that their hearts yearn for. And so the wiring can get in the way, especially as couples are together for longer periods of time, the gender differences, etc. Well, my wiring was short-circuited when I lost my ability to have an erection. And therefore, I was able to slow down and be much more present for Jacqueline in terms of how to please her in a way she wants to be pleased when we are sexually intimate. And that absolutely transformed. That has taken us places that we can't even, it literally has become ineffable, and it continues to get better. And we've been together for years now. And so those are the gifts that I see.
Yes. And exploration, the vibrancy of exploring something with your partner, not living on autopilot, not making love in a traditional way, exploring new ways. If this doesn't work, if because our functioning in our body. Look, I am 52 years old. There's certain things in my body doesn't work like it was. I was in my 20s and 30s. Therefore, I have to look and explore and discover new ways to become intimate with my partner. So the discovery for me is fantastic because it's exciting. I mean, life should be exciting. I mean, people really don't appreciate life because they think they know everything. They figure things the way it used to be, or the way their mom taught them, or their sister taught, whatever. We live in a society where we make assumptions about how things work. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can explore new ways of being intimate with your partner if it doesn't work the way it used to work when you were in your 30s.
And we also live in a society where we tend to look at what's wrong, what's missing, not what's available and what's present. You know, so, you know, it's easy to look at yourself and say, I am fill in the blank years old, but I used to be X, Y, and Z, and I want that back. If I can't have that, I can't have anything. And the two of you were saying that's absolutely not the case.
No. Oh, my God. No. Despite all our uncertainties, and we have plenty, Pamela, you know, certainly the health wise and other ways. We have a lot of uncertainty, but I would not trade my life right now for any other time or any other place or any other person. And it's because we truly are living right now, where before I felt like I was sleepwalking.
Survive.
Yeah, just it's all about survival. You know, you get the job, do your thing, blah blah blah. You come home, you get frustrated, and you don't have life.
Yeah, you take a trip the same place where you used to go every summer.
Yeah.
You know, people just live on autopilot.
Yeah, they live on autopilot.
That's true.
And by definition, we chose not to. And one of the first things I had to let go of is defining myself as a man. How I define myself as a man, and in our culture, as you are well aware, thanks to our pharmaceutical and porn industries, men define themselves by the size and capability of their package, so to speak. And, you know, the only thing that could possibly be worse for my condition in that regard would be if somehow I stepped on a landmine and had it all blown off. I mean, it just doesn't get much worse than my condition. Yet I have never felt more like a man than I do now. And but the first thing I had to do is let go of that limiting belief that that's who I was as a man. So it starts, really, this all starts not about acquiring anything. And when we're up on stage, the first thing we tell them is, this is not about acquiring anything new. It's about letting go of those hidden chains that we all forge for ourselves that hold us back from expressing our complete and total humanity and spirit. And it's really about letting go and then entering into the abyss of the unknown, which is always the case in the moment. And that's why the moment scares people. And that's why today's 21st century version of Soma from Brave New World is George Orwell's Brave New World is distraction. And so we are addicted to distraction because it keeps us from the uncertainty of the moment, which is always there. But that's where the juice is. That's where
the vibrancy,
and the transformation happens, mm-hmm. is in the abyss of the moment where you cannot predict what happens or comes next.
We're going to take a break and we'll come right back. Don't go away. Well, Michael, I mean, clearly you're saying that you no longer define yourself by a body part.
Exactly.
Which
is... That's what we teach other people, too. You know, women who have double mastectomies. That is rough. That is
And they're
hard.
Getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
It's true.
Cancer affects a lot of people. And as I say, younger and younger all the time. And they need, a message of hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the first step, though? Because we clearly live in a world where both of the sexes are encouraged. I mean, turn on the television and within mm-hmm. 10 minutes, you've got evidence that your body part is what makes you real. Mm-hmm. So how do you, your body part is what makes you real. It's what makes you desirable. It's what makes you successful. Fill in the blanks. So how do you begin the process of removing that clearly limiting perspective and opening yourself up to a broader awareness and a broader life? What's the first step?
Turn it off. Stop watching the media.
Yeah. dropped your Netflix membership.
Yeah, we dropped everything. And
detox news.
Yeah. We
don't listen to the news.
The news is very
not,
negative, and yeah. and everything, and the
and
thing.
And become more conscious.
Yeah, and then also, be willing to explore. Here's when people make this shift. Pamela, and I'm sure you're very aware of this. It's all based on how much pain they're feeling. When the pain of their current circumstances, whether it's emotional pain or whatever, finally exceeds the perceived pain of exploring the unknown, they will make a shift. And it helps to eliminate the background noise and the background BS that is out there, you know, basically promulgating these false beliefs and limiting beliefs. Those are all chains. Those are all designed to keep us buying stuff, to keep us adding to ourselves, somehow thinking that if we keep adding to ourselves, we're going to be whole.
If I just get the newer model of that car, if I just have the bigger house, if I just go far in that trip that I always wanted to go.
You see these celebrities in Hollywood, they get all these facelifts and plastic surgery. They're trying to recapture something. You know, aging is part of life. It is part of the cycle. And so to let it go and then focus more on you know, what is wonderful about right now? And this is, and how you, one defines themselves as a human being or a particular sex or sexuality is a choice. And the, and that's the first step, is realizing it is a choice. And that's where we see it has to start.
You say that the lack of empathy and the lack of resources available to cancer patients and their partners is huge. It's
yes.
you describe it as being you say it's, in fact, quoting you, a rampant lack of empathy and resources.
Yes.
So a couple of things. On the one hand, we're talking about really broadening how you think about yourself and taking away that narrowly focused definition of a body part as being who you are and what you are. And then we're talking about resources with respect to intimacy. So it sounds like we've also got to redefine what intimacy is and then make resources available, which I guess is what you and Jackie are really working hard to do.
That's right. And we do this in our writing and we get on the platform. But interestingly, that you would bring up the medical community, they recognize this is missing. And we've done the research. Jacqueline does all the research. I make the calls. And it's amazing how little there is out there. And one of the
we went to a symposium for cancer survivors, and there wasn't
a single discussion.
Nobody
about
was talking about the consequences to
intimacy and relationships.
Yeah, relationships of the medication and treatment.
Yeah,
none.
It was so interesting. This was last February, and of course they had all the Harvard-educated academics and oncologists up on the panel. And when we approached them afterwards and asked them about this, we got the nice little pat on the head. Well, that's very nice, and yeah, you know, we have a program, which they really didn't. And all this, and not much of one. But it was interesting because when we walked out of the hotel to get, this was in the evening in San Diego, and we needed to get a bite to eat. As we go to the little store down at the in the lobby of the cafe, in the lobby of the hotel, two young women follow us out. They said
they overheard what we were talking.
They overheard what we were talking about, and they said,
"I want to hear more about
it. We want to hear more about what you guys do." And
they were in their 30s.
That, no, I'd say even their 20s.
Yeah,
they were sisters. One had vulvarian cancer, which is, you know, very,
and
the other one had double mastectomy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they were young sisters, yeah. And they said, "No one talks to us about this." So what we're doing, we're starting in the front line. So in addition to the speaking that we do to the survivors and partners and symposiums and that sort of thing, we are just now putting together a 3-hour continuing education program for oncology and urologic nurses and nurse navigators about the intimacy conversation that absolutely needs to be happen at the point of intake of a new patient. And then we provide them with all the resources at no cost to anybody, including the medical community, to help them navigate their path through this as they go through the treatments. And so that's where we're starting.
Michael, you're saying at the point of intake,
yes,
these conversations should happen.
When a patient comes in and realize, oh, you have cancer, and they come in with their partner. Depending on the type of cancer,
reproductive cancer.
If it's your reproductive cancers are the most pernicious in this regard. But typically, the person with the cancer is thinking about are they going to be, if it's a reproductive cancer, male or female, they're thinking, am I still going to be a woman or man, right, after this?
Right.
And the partner's thinking, am I going to have a partner for much longer? So this is a really messed up place for them, and they're both anxious, and you know, you have existential issues and financial issues. Mm-hmm. You've got, and then and then on top of that, the majority of these cancers typically happen with people who are mature, and so if they've been together for a while, often for years or decades, there's a lot of wounding that's already happened within the relationship, and this could be the last straw that breaks the camel's back. And
the point is when they most need each other.
That's when they most need each other.
Interesting.
And yeah, and ironically, and we're not the only ones that this happened to. It can also be the threshold to extraordinary levels of emotional, sexual, and even spiritual intimacy that they've never experienced before, ever in their relationship.
I'm thinking that there are some folks, whether they are feeling filled with an illness or completely illness-free, who are saying, that is way too much energy. I don't want to expend it. I don't want to be that vulnerable. I don't want to do that much work.
Yeah,
well, they're gonna live their life unfulfilled for the rest of their lives, and it's a choice that they make.
That's a choice they make, and it's not actually so much work, in terms of we're exhausted. All that work we had today. No, it's not like that. It is being aware. Mm-hmm. Now, when people first start becoming truly aware, beyond that, voice in your head.
You integrate in your life, actually. Yeah. So you don't have to think about it. It becomes, you integrate this awareness in your life and becomes part of who you are.
Yeah. Now, the vulnerability, that's a good point, because being vulnerable, which is a charged word in our culture, as you well know, is usually perceived as being a weakness. We see it as one of the most courageous acts there are, because we define vulnerability, Pamela, as the willingness to feel everything. I mean, the highest highs to the lowest lows. And yet we live in a culture that essentially says,
conspire to keep us.
Yeah, we don't want
yeah,
you to feel bad.
Right. For pain.
Yeah, you can eat that ice cream, you'll feel better. You can eat that candy bar. You can watch that Netflix you can't stand, but at least you don't have to think about anything.
Zone out.
You zone out.
People go to the theater and they zone out for hours. Go to the mall, they zone out. You know, go shopping spree, they zone out.
Yeah, so the vulnerability is crucial. And because as you know, there's no one way valve for feelings. You either feel everything or you feel pretty much nothing. And, before I met Jacqueline, I was on Zoloft for 7 years and I felt nothing. I didn't feel bad, didn't feel good, just felt nothing. And I wasn't living. And so shortly after we met, I got off of it. And, the pharmaceutical industry was all too anxious to get me on that. And I asked the psychiatrist at the time, he said, I do, just to let you know, I get paid by this company to speak about it. And that should have been my warning right there.
Yeah.
But it's so unfortunate. So yes. So typically, again, we go back to, for most people, they have to get to a point where the misery of their certainty exceeds the perceived misery of uncertainty, where everything happens, where the magic happens. And when you're dealing with people who are facing a life-threatening mm-hmm. illness,
they
such
usually
as cancer,
are open.
They're more open to that possibility. It is very difficult to have this conversation with people who have no major challenges in their mm-hmm. life mm-hmm. because they are comfortable in their misery. And there's that comfort
blanket
again.
And they become part of who they are.
Yeah,
they're used to it.
Well, that's just what it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. You talk about holding master heart meetings. What's that?
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Well, master heart meetings are a meeting that Michael and I do on, let's say, every other week or every month. It could be every other month. The point is we meet to talk about things that bother us, about the minor things that bother about the other person, okay? So let's say I'm washing the dishes and I put all my dishes on the rack and I put the glasses on the counter, and Michael is looking at me like saying, why are you putting the glass on the counter, because they're not going to dry. You know what I mean? The small potatoes mm-hmm. that we when couples we live together, I was taught to do it this way and he was taught to do it this way, or he thinks this is the best way. So we talk about the minor annoyances in the relationship in those meetings. And it's a template. We have like a one sheet template where it's an organized meeting, and we say, Look, I don't like when you throw your socks on the floor when you come back from work. Would you mind changing that behavior? And that person make a promise that they're going to change that behavior if they feel like this is something they can negotiate. So that's what the master art meeting is about.
It's for the minor little irritations. And, the funny thing about that it's so funny because when we moved in together, Jacqueline would put these cups face down on the granite countertop. And I'm thinking, the engineer in me is saying, that's never going to dry. It's going to form bacteria in there. We're going to just die a horrible death. And
I had no idea. Sometimes we just don't know. We have done this behavior.
Right.
We have this behavior for a long time, and sometimes it's difficult to get rid of them. But if you know about them, so these meetings are for me to learn, what am I doing that bother him, that really get in his nerves? And we aspire to live in harmony. Therefore, we negotiate. We say, well, yeah, I can change that behavior.
Yeah. So so those are for the minor annoyances. For the big ones where we feel a major charge,
we
talk about it right then and there.
Yeah.
Right then and there, we talk about it.
Yeah.
And from the context of we are our heart, not our ego, the egos are having a conniption fit right now. We get it. So let's talk this through.
Yeah.
And that works very effectively.
Yeah. To avoid the wounding.
You know, it's interesting that you are recommending that really nothing be ignored, that you pay attention to the entirety of the person and to the entirety of the relationship. Where can folks go to get more information about the work that you folks are doing?
Well, we've been told that anybody who's read our book, who's whether they have cancer or not, says this is not just for people with cancer.
It's
it
true.
It really is for everybody.
It's
and
true.
So the first place would be our book, which is Return to Sex and Intimacy for Cancer Survivors and Their Partners. Or just remember, Return to Sex and Intimacy. That's the only one that has that title on Amazon, both in print and Kindle. And then also
the website,
we have Cancer Intimacy.
CancerIntimacyHelp.com.
Cancer Intimacy Help. Yeah.
CancerIntimacyHelp.com.
And it has like the
calendar,
a lot of
calendar of presentations.
And then also they have that template for the Master Heart template that they can freely download. A lot of free stuff on there.
Q&A. We have a Q&A.
Yeah, we have a monthly Q&A that people can call in live second Tuesday of every month. They can ask us any question they want.
Wonderful.
So we have a lot of free resources there. And this is our mission. This is not about getting rich.
And then Michael have over 100 articles. So if someone just Google his name, they'll be able to read all the articles he has written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. Folks, thank you so much for joining us today and for the work that you're continuing to do.
Thank you.
Thank you
for the opportunity to have this talk with you. Thank you, Pamela.
We have a great time.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is available to you on demand by going to mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. Or you can download the free Mind Talk app by going to the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to Mind Talk, so send me an email to pamela@mindtalk.org. Again, that's mindtalk.org. And I welcome any of your comments, your thoughts, your reactions or suggestions to any of the conversations that you are listening to here on Mind Talk. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. And remember, always remember, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.